How you doing, my friends? This is Alex Pardo, and you're back on the Flip Empire Show, episode 352.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. What's going on, guys? I have a banging episode for you today with Jim Hunziker. Jim is somebody who has been in this business same year that I got in, 2005, started on the residential side, has done well over 500 deals, primarily as a rehabber, came out with a system and a course back in the day called MLS Domination. But you know, he got into this business for freedom and for cash flow. And around 2013, he really started to educate himself in the world of multifamily. Fast forward a couple of years after that, 2015, he ended up partnering with someone who brought him a deal, and they ended up reselling a multifamily, essentially flipping a multifamily for over $1 million in profit, actual profit. Now, as you're going to hear him say, that's not typical. Don't expect to get into multifamily and right off the bat, just knock off a seven-figure deal. But he didn't get into that business to buy and sell multifamily. He got in for the cash flow, and we really dive into what he looks for. We dive into the risk associated with multifamily, how he got in the business, what he's learned, how he evaluates these deals, what the potential is. And what's really interesting about Jim is that he's not your typical syndicator where he pulls a bunch of money and brings in a bunch of investors to come up with the down payment. He works with one lender, one down payment, and it's a very simplified way to structure these deals. And he's actually on here because he's got nothing to sell. As you guys know, we don't sell anything on this podcast. He wants to partner with people, essentially, and he's got a ton of experience. He's got several of these deals under his belt. And today's show, 100% content. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. So let's dive right in. How are you, my friends? Welcome back to another masterclass here on the Flip Empire Show. I have my friend, Jim Hunziker. Jim, did I pronounce your last name right there?
Yeah, great, man. You did a good job. Very good. Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. So guys, just to give you a little bit of background before I bring Jim on here, years ago, Jim and I got started in this business around the same time, 2005. And you did a great job, by the way. I don't know if it was intentional, but I always knew you as the MLS domination guy. Back in the day, and you got started in the residential side, you know, you had a kick-ass business. And then around 2013, you transitioned over to multifamily. You started learning more about multifamily. So I want to pick up the conversation there, Jim, because a big portion of the audience that listens to this show are single family investors, a lot of wholesalers, a lot of fix and flip investors. And, you know, most of us get into this business for the freedom that the cash flow can provide. And it's very easy, as you know, on the residential side to get caught up in deal after deal after deal. And yes, we make a lot of money, but you got to kind of start all over every single month. And obviously with multifamily, that's not necessarily the case. So talk about how you got in this business in 2005. I'd be curious to kind of hear a brief story about how you got into real estate. And then I'd love to hit the fast forward button to around the time where you transitioned into multifamily.
For sure. Yeah, I got in as an agent. I mean, I'm still a licensed agent today in Illinois and in Florida, but I don't practice as an agent very much. You know, I mean, somebody calls me with a $800,000 listing, I'm taking it, you know, because those are easy. That's easy stuff to do. Now, I have an assistant that handles that stuff full time, but I do very little real estate as an agent anymore. But that's how I started. And so that's where MLS domination came from too, is because when I first started rehabbing in 2007, that's all I knew. I didn't have any training yet. All I knew is what I knew as an agent, and I knew how to find deals using the MLS. And so for the majority of my career till like 2012, 13, I got 75% of my rehabs from the MLS.
Okay.
So that's where how MLS domination was born too. MLS domination was born when my kids were born, literally, as a way to supplement income so I could hang out with my kids more.
Awesome.
The reason I stopped selling MLS domination, because it was a great product, just because I was getting market exposure. And you know, one of those things you don't think about when you're just building a business like we do as entrepreneurs, right? We just kind of go and don't think about, you know, we think about, oh yes, it'll be money that comes from this book. But what also came from it was you know, a little bit of, like, I guess, notoriety. I was meeting more people, and more people getting to know who I was. And you know, the older I get, the more I realize I don't want to know everybody, and I don't want to be, you know, put on a pedestal in any way, shape, or form. And so I just kind of shut that whole thing down because I wasn't interested in it. But anyway, so I've been rehabbing. And then in 2013, like, I looked at buying rent, you know, I was buying rentals. And so, but like one at a time, or a two flat or a four unit. And it was taking painfully long to like build up, you know, especially in my market. I'm in suburban Chicago. And so I started studying multifamily in 2013. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to stop trying to buy any kind of one-off, two, three, four. I want to buy 100 at a time.
Okay.
And so I'm kind of all or nothing in anything I do. And so this just made a lot of sense to me anyway. I always had an interest in it. So I studied it for 2 years before I got into it, because what I really studied was that, you know, the deals, okay, whatever. You can break down a single family rental the same way you could break down 200 units. It's the exact same thing. It's
sure.
That's no different. You know, the expenses, but less the gross rental. And you know, you have, but the deal structure, right? Like I've never put any of, you know, my own money into deals. So I was learning the in-depth deal structures, and that's what I really wanted to understand fully before I got myself into it. And I didn't need to, cause I was doing other stuff for income. So I was really just learning that business. I was learning the commercial lending side of it, that, you know, how private lenders work in that space,
right,
how the creative deals work, how these syndications that were starting to come about, you know, how those work. And I don't love that like that whole situation is not for me. All the deals I've done in multifamily have been with one private lender for the down payment, and then also one major lender for the, you know, for the loan. So I was just learning all the ins and the outs of it. And then I finally pulled the trigger, you know, about 2015, when I got into my first deal. And so,
Beautiful. Well, you touched on a few things that I definitely want to ask you about, because I know syndications have been very popular. A lot of multifamily guys that I know, you know, syndicate and pull the money together. And, so I want to find out about, you know, how you're structuring. It sounds like you're working with one particular lender. So we'll get into all that, but when you transitioned and you started learning about multifamily, were you at a place in your life financially in your business where you, it was kind of like an off switch. You just completely shut off the single family business and just dove right into multifamily, or what was the transition like?
No, I still did rehabbing. I slowed down a lot from what I was doing, but I still did rehabbing until like about a year and a half ago, I'd say. And that had nothing to do with anything other than the market. You know, that I'm in suburban Chicago. It's where I'd done all my rehabs. The average square footage was about a 2,800 square foot house. My average rehab cost was $85,000. You know, so I did bigger rehabs. I've done rehabs as big as $400,000 on huge old homes and stuff.
Wow.
So, but the market's just changed so much. And so it wasn't my primary business anymore. So I wasn't focusing as much on the acquisition side of that business, which is where we all know is the money is made. And so the deals just became, and even if I was, the deals are harder to come by now. And so there's a right time and a wrong time to do, you know, the right strategy, wrong market, right? So I just felt that rehabbing was the right strategy, you know, until a year and a half ago. And then for me, I just hung it up because the profit wasn't there as much anymore.
Yep.
I mean, I could still, if I focus even on today, and a year and a half later, if I focus on that as my primary business, all I want to do is rehab, I could make a ton of money rehabbing. There's still plenty of people doing it. It just wasn't, you know, wasn't the model I wanted to follow anymore. I had done it for 10 years and, you know, contractors and babysitting, I just wanted to take a break from that, you know? And so, I mean, we're still rehabbing multifamily, so I still get to deal with my babysitting contractors in that regard, but, I have better systems set up so that way I have other people that are managing more of that than was more me directly in my business here.
Got it. I think one of the things that's fascinating about your story is that a lot of people, whether it's fear, mindset, you know, the unknown, or maybe it's just education and experience or not having the right people in your corner. Most people that I know anyway, don't jump from never having done multifamily to just focusing on 90, 100 units plus. Can you specifically talk to somebody who might be listening that is interested in multifamily, interested in commercial, but they're not thinking that big? They're like, okay, well, let me maybe test the waters with a 10 or a 20 or 30 unit before I jump up, you know, to the big boys.
Yeah. And I went through all that too. Like that was the kind of the process I went through when I was learning the numbers, right? When I was just focusing on the numbers and how the numbers shook out and how, all I was trying to do was set up cash flow, right? Long-term cash flow. That's it. That was the whole goal of this, right? So as I looked in 10 years, cause I bought some, you know, two four units. And so I looked at doing 10, 20, 50. I went down that path. It's no more time for me to do 100 units or 10. For me to evaluate that deal, it's no more of my time, right? And so if I'm going to take the time to evaluate a deal and I'm in the multifamily and I learned how to, you know, set up financing for them, why wouldn't I just do the biggest deals possible, right? And so, but that's not for everybody either, right? Because with that comes more risk. And so in everything we do is risk, right? And so that's like whatever your risk tolerance is, that's what you have to figure out. And, you know, for me, you know, good or bad, I've gotten to where I am by having a pretty high risk tolerance. And so I went right in. I had an opportunity to get a 91 unit and I did. That's the first one I went after. And that's, you know, the deal on this, that we made $1,060,000 on that deal. It was supposed to be a quick flip though, dude. And we kept it for 2 years. So it didn't go according to plan by any stretch, but that's why I saw the opportunity there. And the people who brought it to me weren't really sure what they had. They knew it was a good price, but not how good. And so I worked myself in a 25% equity in that deal and I had not a penny of my own money in that deal.
Okay. So let's dive into that because I don't think I've interviewed very many people that have done $1 million plus on one transaction.
Okay, my biggest profit before this single profit was just over 100, right? So this is not a normal thing. I don't want people to think this is the norm.
Totally get it.
Multifamily, this is going to happen. This was a unique situation that the seller actually thought he was ripping us off because he thought it was selling for over tax assessed value. So he thought that he was getting one up on us, and we sold it for like $1 million more than he sold to us for.
Got it. And by the way, I'm glad that you prefaced it by saying, you know, results aren't typical. You don't expect to get into multifamily and you know, knock off this kind of deal on your first. I mean, it's possible, obviously Jim's proving that, but this was 2015, your very first deal in multifamily.
Yeah. But it's not like I came into real estate investing and did $1 million deal. I've been doing it for, I mean, I'm a licensed agent. I've done, you know, over 500 deals. Like
you know what you're doing.
And I studied, I learned, I knew the trend, I knew my stuff. And so this just goes to show you that when you know your stuff and you know what you're looking at and you know what the true market value is, because you know, you've done the research on it, that you could do a deal like this on your first multifamily deal. Cause I did. You know, and so it's not like I got lucky. I went forward with the deal because I knew it was a great deal.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You knew enough to recognize it. So how did you find this deal? Because obviously you and I both know that with multifamily apartment investing, it's not your typical send out a yellow letter, send out a we buy properties cat. That's not the deal here. So how did you connect with this owner? How'd you identify and find the deal?
Yeah, so it was brought to me, right? I met somebody. Somebody actually sat at my table at a mastermind, and I went to lunch. I'm kind of an introvert, you know. I'm kind of a loner in a lot of ways, and so I always eat lunch alone. I know people say to eat with other people, but I've got a lot on my mind, and I was eating alone. And a group of people came from the mastermind, and they all sat down, and somebody sat at my table. You know, and I was cool with that because I like to talk to people. I'm just kind of an introvert, and all of a sudden, I talk about this deal, and I'm like, and then we talked more about the deal. I'm like, that's. If you're right on the numbers, I said, you got some. I said, you should go put that under contract Monday. Like, this is like on Friday. And I'm like, just walk into his office with the contract. I told her what to do. And so she calls me Monday afternoon. She's like, I did it. I got it under contract. You want in? And I was like, all right, game on. So we worked out a partnership agreement because they didn't really know how to do the deal. Okay. And I did. And so I had the contacts to get it sold. And so that's how I got into the deal. It was brought to me. I met somebody literally at a mastermind, which, you know, masterminds we both know are very powerful for lots of reasons. Yeah. And this was a deal that got brought to me that was $1 million profit that I met somebody at a mastermind.
Incredible. And just so I have some context, was this person that sat at that table and brought you this deal, was this a newbie? Was it someone that had been in the game? Like, how did that person connect with this seller?
It was an aggressive newbie, very aggressive newbie. And there's somebody who had not done many deals in the residential side. I think maybe a couple of wholesales. Maybe I didn't get an answer on that, to be honest. But they were very, very new. And so this was too big of a deal for any. I mean, even in somebody who was relatively, you know, seasoned, this was a big deal. And we had to come up with $1,250,000. So it's not like it was, you know, it was 40% occupied. It was totally run down. The guy we bought it from was a slumlord. So it had all kinds of Section 8 drug dealers and just not even go there at night kind of thing. Like, it was a pretty rough complex.
Got it. So was it a D property in a C area, yeah, or was this in a rougher area? Was this in a D neighborhood? Okay. Got it. So D property in a C neighborhood.
No, D property in a C area.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Understood. And you said that you had the contacts as you had. Have you always had the financial backing? Can you talk to me a little bit about just some of the resources that you brought to the table when you were sitting at this mastermind?
So the lenders, you know, like, and I've been around since, you know, 2005, like you. And so I started, you know, learning and really educating myself and getting out there, meeting people like 2008, which is when I joined a national coaching program. And so I met a lot, because it was early on in their program, I met a lot of very high level people that are, you know, now very high level, not then. But so I got in things at the right time. I made a lot of really good contacts early on. And so I had that. And so there, in those contacts were actually who I was originally marketing the property to. Okay. They were educated enough to know that they didn't have to pay as much as I was offering it for. So none of them were interested. So I had to find other buyers, which we did. But we took us three buyers, and I'll explain that in a minute, because first buyer, you know, backed out. Second buyer lost a ton of deposit. Third one is the one who finally closed.
Okay. And what was the purchase price? A million what?
250.
Okay. And usually, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, but with apartments, usually you're putting down 25 to 30%. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's, you had to raise about what, 300 grand, 400 grand on this property?
No. So what I did on this particular one, because we had it sold before we even closed on it, I had a contract to sell it for 2.3 million.
Okay.
So I was able to show that to a lender that, you know, one of my lenders, and they financed this 100% because it was such, we bought it so far under market value, and I could prove that. It wasn't like I just called and said, hey, it's under market value, give me the money. And they said, okay. I showed them a contract. I showed them why. I showed them all the numbers. The reason I moved into the deal is when I showed them to say, hey, look, here's an analysis I ran that got me interested in the deal, which is why you should be comfortable lending, at 100% of it. And they agreed. And so they lent at 100% of it. So that it was literally 100% financing on this deal, because we were supposed to only have it for 3 months, by the way.
Incredible. But this is a property that was non-performing. You said 40% of it was occupied?
Yeah, it was ugly. It was ugly. But the land, we were so far under, even at what with the current rent roll was, we were underpaying for it. Like we were buying, it was just the tax assessed value was $1.2 million. We bought it for $1.25 million. And the guy told the title agent, the seller told the title agent that he was like getting one up on us because we paid $50,000 over, and he thought it was already over assessed. So it was like, he thought he was screwing us, and we were like, we were cool being screwed, you know, like whatever, man.
I would have loved to have seen his face if he happened to find out in the public records what it actually resold.
Oh, he did. He has a couple thousand units, this guy. So we're actually trying to buy another complex from him right now, but his prices have gone up dramatically.
How do you explain that, Jim? Somebody, and maybe this isn't the best question to ask, but I'm curious, no, someone that has a couple thousand units you think would be sophisticated, but this person obviously just had no idea what they had, or they didn't care.
They were kind of a slumlord, and yeah, didn't really care. They were basing the market of multifamily solely on the market in Oklahoma. This was in Oklahoma City. And they were basing it solely on what Oklahoma does in their network of local people. Okay. They didn't have a network outside of that, like expanded with more people. They had this small little bubble, I will call it. And in their bubble, they had the prices that they thought that everybody would pay. And so, and the price he put this out there for, quite honestly, we weren't there right away. Like he could have sold it to lots of other people. He was marketing it for this $1.2 million. And so that other people, like the other local people he was marketing to, didn't know the true value of it either. So by the time we got to it, it was just one of those things that I'm like, it can't be right. I run the numbers, and I went out there, I flew out there by myself just to go look at it. I didn't even tell the people, because I'm like, something's gotta be wrong here. Like this is something's not right. You know, and it closed. You know, like
what's interesting to me, and that there's such a valuable lesson in what you just shared right there, and I don't want to kind of gloss over it, is I'm guessing there's a lot of people that saw that deal, Jim, that probably had the same thought. It's too good to be true. There's something off here. And because of that, they just passed on the deal. Where you actually went above and beyond. You took the extra step. You flew out there. You really vetted the deal. And that wasn't the case. It really, really was a deal. Was this something that was like all over LoopNet, where a bunch of people had seen it, brokers, or it was off market?
Off market. This guy, like he was super, he's a super smart guy, right? He knew what he was doing. And, or he thought. And so he didn't, it was an off market deal. He was marketing only, you know, to his network, and these people were part of that network somehow that I partnered with on the deal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's it. It's wow. If that would have been on LoopNet, he would have made the extra million.
Sure. Okay. So walk me through I think you mentioned three buyers on this thing. You got this property under contract. Did you immediately identify the exit that your plan was to essentially resell this thing and not take it down and hold it?
Yes, instantly. Because the people that were involved, I was wanting to buy and hold multifamily, but the people that brought me the deal, they were more interested in the quick flip. And it was so big, I was like, whatever, I'm good with it too. You know, like I didn't want to try to talk them into keeping it. And buying them out, I didn't want to buy it for the price we were selling it for, even though I could, you know, so I was like, we'll just sell it and be done. So we established early on. I mean, there was a B, you know, and if our exit didn't work out, we were going to rehab it and keep it. That was plan B. So we mm-hmm. bought it so right, it didn't matter. We couldn't really go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the
first buyer, right? Yeah.
Yeah. The first buyer, we had a 2.3 and they were supposed to close right away, like 3 months after we bought it. And it was a cash deal. The close call on Friday, on Monday, they call us and ask us for a 30-day financing extension on their cash deal. Mm-hmm. So we say, all right, well, you know, give us $50,000 hard extra earnest money right now and we'll do it, you know, because we expect to close Friday on your cash deal. It's clearly no longer cash. You put up more earnest money, we'll give you an extension. They said no. They're like, we want the extension with no additional money. And so we of course said no. So they ended up being attorneys, these guys, and they were shady. They sent letters upon letter to the title company, scaring them into not giving us our hard deposit back. So we would have had to take them to court. Oh, it's crazy. I'm very much of the mindset. I don't want to go after bad money. I don't want to have any brain damage in court if I don't have to. So this was only 40 grand because you're supposed to close so quickly. It was only 40 grand. Mm-hmm. So not that it's only, I'm not trying to like minimize.
No, I get it though. I get
a lot of money, but for me, for us to go to, I partners. So for me to go to court and deal with suing somebody for like $12,000 of my side of that or 30, whatever, which wasn't worth it to me. So we released the money in the end. So I didn't have to go because they were both buyers were attorneys and they were willing to lie because they lied to the title company to scare them into not giving us the deposit back. So mm-hmm. going to court, who knows what they're willing to do? I'm not going to spend money in court with guys that are willing to lie. You know, it's not worth it to me, you know? And so if it was 400 grand, different story. If it's 400 grand, right? Mm-hmm. If it's 40 grand, we just made the decision not to go after it.
Yeah. Smart. Smart.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and had you decided to fight it, who knows if you would have even been in a place mentally or otherwise to even find your third buyer, which is, you know, so like, there's just, who knows, but I think you made the right call. So what happened with the second one who lost? I think you mentioned they lost a crap ton of money.
200,000.
Oh, that's painful.
And this is why I don't love syndications, because that was my first real I learned about them. I understood them. I get that, you know, how they work. But that was a syndication deal. And so that money was like they needed extensions. And that money kept coming in. And it was, you know, and I don't know for a fact it was, because I never asked him. It's none of my business how he's buying it. But I'm pretty sure that's what that was. That there was a syndication where whoever lost 200 grand, you know, and I felt terrible. But we were legally... we didn't do anything wrong. They couldn't perform. In fact, the last extension I gave him for free because I didn't want to take their money. Right. I said, like, look, you have 90 days, no more extensions, no more money. I don't want any more of your money. If you can't close in 90 days, because we had a distressed asset that was losing money every month because it was 40% occupied. So now, what's that?
No, it's costing you. Exactly.
No, right. So we actually, you know, so that when we had, once the money went hard, his deposit originally, even before we knew we were going to keep it, we started mm-hmm. putting that money into rehabbing some of it, which was not the plan. We ended up putting about 40,000 into it, only so we could get some of the units, get the rent roll up a little bit higher, mm-hmm. Just because we would lose people. So long story short is we gave them that last 90 days. They said, we're like, you know, this is your opportunity to either close or not. We're not giving you another extension. And it was a free extension at that. And they couldn't perform. So then we went on to buyer three, who closed for 2.3. Incredible. So that guy was actually at 2.4. But that was phantom money because it never existed, right? So then we ended up closing at 2.3. And long story, from the beginning to the end, with keeping the 200,000, with losing money in the process, you know, we made $1,060,000 was a profit on that.
Unbelievable. And you, I think you mentioned at the top of the show that your piece of that was 25% with no money.
Correct.
Unbelievable. That's incredible, man. Just over 250 grand and you essentially just knew where to go, how to put the deal together. Amazing.
It just goes to show you, but it's studying and knowing your stuff. Like, you know, like it just... I just studied, I learned the ins and the outs. So every question anybody had for me, though I hadn't done a deal at the time, I knew the answer. And I wasn't just making it up. I knew a true answer for it. And I even knew people who could get done. I'd buy it because I had been, I've been diligently studying because this was something I was getting into. You know, right. I wasn't passively looking at it. It was kind of, oh, maybe I'll do it. I was, I was studying it all, storing it away. And so it just goes to show you like the power of education and learning it. I knew what I had.
Yep. No, and there's so many nuggets. The fact that you were smart enough to put yourself in a mastermind around other people that presented the deal. You had been doing the work, studying. You took action, which is what most people don't do. And you got rewarded for it handsomely. So that's incredible, man. Unbelievable. I'm just curious. Do you know where, like when that, when the third buyer picked up that property for the 2.3, what was the cap rate he was buying it at that point? Or like what was the potential of the asset once he, you know, brought it up to speed?
Well, he was, his plan was, so he paid 2.3. He was putting, $1.1 million into it. So he was going to be into it for 3.4. I think 3.5 was his total. Cause he said with the parking up. Yeah. So 3.5 was his all in. And he figured that would be, it would be worth, at 95% occupancy with a 7% cap. I believe that was a 5.2, I think is where he would, where he ended up. It was somewhere along. I don't have those are not numbers I've written in front of me, but I believe those were his numbers. Okay. I think 5.2 was his end value that he was getting his end loaned off of.
Got it. Got it. So what'd you do after that one? You know, you pocketed $250,000. Obviously you got into multifamily for, to buy and hold for the cash flow, not necessarily, but this was such a big pop. It was just kind of a no brainer for you. Were you just evaluating deal after deal, like to find the one, like how did you get to the next one?
Yeah. So the next one, also in Oklahoma City, came from the same partners out there. We bought, that was a buy and hold. It's 105 units. And so that one now is just getting finished rehabbing now. And it's about stabilized. And so we're going through an end loan on it right now. Mm-hmm. And then we'll pull out some, you know, we'll pull out some money in that. Cause you can literally do cash out refis for non-recourse cash out refis on these things.
Tax-free.
So, it's unbelievable. You know, it's because it's tax free. So everybody understands, like when you sell it, you will have to pay tax on it, but it's tax free today because it's not income. It's just, it's equity in the deal you own. So you know, if you sell it, if you never sell it, you'll never pay it on that. But the point is that, yeah, there is tax free income that comes from these. It's unreal. So
can you explain, Jim, for people that don't know, the fact that you refi out, that asset is still cash flowing for you. I mean, it's not like you're pulling out all of your equity and now it's a non-performing. I mean, that thing is still, you're getting several hundred thousand dollars and it's cash flowing.
Yeah, right. So we'll, in the end, this one at 90%, because where this one is, it's C class. So to keep it at 95 is doable, but we're running numbers at 90 because we want to be realistic. that one, after our non-recourse loan comes out, we'll be at about $35,000 a month in cash flow is what where it will end. And that's after, you know, pulling a couple hundred out.
Incredible. So, and how is that particular one structured with your partners?
That one, I have a third interest in that, 33%. I have no money out of pocket on that. And we have a ground partner, which is who's there day to day, not every day, but that anything on the ground that they'll handle. Mm-hmm. And then my office is in Chicago and I run everything else from here. Anything, all the paperwork, all the bank stuff, everything comes to my office here. And I run operationally. I have a ground partner and then we have a financial partner too.
Understood. Did you mention, how did you find it?
It's the same partners out there in Oklahoma. They came up with it. Yep. They came up with it. And, but we, you know, we've had other deals, you know, their creative marketing is really what works. Like this thing you're saying earlier, yellow letters, that stuff doesn't work. Not for multifamily. I'm not saying it can't, but you know, consistency is what makes marketing work, as we all know. And doing that kind of marketing to multifamily might work over time, but we know it's not as effective as it is in the single family. So like you got to get more creative. There's not as many people to mail to here. There's not in multifamily, just not as many. So we really target people that have owned stuff for, you know, long periods of time, no loans if possible. And we send them like, you know, gift baskets, literally local gift baskets, meats, cheeses, chocolates, coffee, whatever. Just like stuff that's like local. And just saying, we're trying to meet, we're not looking to buy their property, by the way. all we're looking to do is meet other multifamily owners and network, because we're new to the area and we own multifamily. But we want to meet other multifamilies too. But hey, if you're looking to acquire more, so if you, anybody you know is looking to sell a multifamily, just please let us know, because we'd love to buy it. You know, we pay top dollar, not theirs, right? Somebody else's. So we're not asking for theirs directly. That's the key here.
It's an indirect deal. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just it's just a networking. Essentially, it's a networking letter that is it's a soft ask is really what it is. You know, we're planting a seed in the back end about somebody else's, one of their friends. You know, literally, if they know anybody else in the multifamily might be looking to sell, but we don't ask about buying theirs directly. And so it's an easy way to get, because then they'll call you back. Usually they'll call you because they don't think you're going after their property in particular. Mm-hmm. And we're not, you know, and I mean, if they're not selling, I'm not going to try to force them to. Maybe in a year, maybe in five, maybe in 10, you know, but I'm just looking to build a relationship with people that have owned these for a long time and they could potentially sell them in the future.
That's a big aha for me right there, because, you know, a lot of people just send letters asking to buy their complex, right? And I love the approach where, hey, you just look at the network, build a relationship, add value, and hey, by the way, this is what we're looking for if you know anyone. And I could totally see people that are thinking about selling kind of raise their hand and say, well, actually, you know. So that's really cool, man. I like that approach a lot. What are the risks involved? Somebody's listening to this. They've been thinking about jumping into multifamily, or they're in, but they're just having a hard time gaining traction. What do they need to watch out for? How do they protect themselves? Obviously, we know that they have to educate themselves first and foremost, mastermind, mentors, coaches, all that good stuff. But what are the things, like, what are the pitfalls?
Well, this is, you know, not that there's not sharks in the single family world, but there's a lot of sharks in the commercial world, right? Like there's people that will intentionally, and it's big money, you know, like it's not in a single family, like, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's not big, depending on the stuff you're doing, but at the end of the day, it's not crazy. We're buying these things for $2-3 million and they need $1 million in work, $2 million in work, whatever, you know? And so there's more, a lot more risk. You really have to do your homework. But then also believe in yourself to pull the trigger, right? Cause you could do all the homework in the world, but if you're too scared to pull the trigger, then what's the point? Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, once you, you know, at a point like me, I did study stuff and, you know, for a couple of years before I ended up pulling the trigger. And, this was me looking at, you know, I ask questions to a lot of guys I know in the multifamily world. I would see at masterminds and then just going into deals, digging into deal structures, talking to lenders, the guys who lend on that, how they lend on that, talking to syndicators, what they, you know. And so mine was really a lot of my research was network based, you know, where I talked to people doing it and heard what they were doing. I mean, there's books Dave Lindell stuff. There's books I read, you know, most of the stuff I learned from people doing it right now that I went and talked to that I knew were doing it. I'm in an effort to go, you know, talk to them, whether I knew them or not.
Yeah. Good friend of mine who I've had on the show and we're a part of another mastermind together. Tim Bratz is such a good dude. He's absolutely crushing it now.
He's killing it. I know Bratz well.
Yeah. Bratz is a solid dude. And he's doing really, really well. What haven't I asked you about multifamily investing specifically for the residential investors that are listening to this that want to make the transition, whether it's now or at some point, is continue to do, what would your advice be to continue doing, making money with knowing what they do, but start to educate, you start to surround yourself with the people, multifamily investors, and then just be able to identify and recognize opportunity? Would you tell them to focus on one aspect of the business versus trying to be an operator, like raising capital or building relationships? What's your advice for these people?
Well, finding the deals, that's the hardest part of this is, you know, learning how to structure the deals and learning, you know, the management side of it, the property management side of it, the software. I mean, there's so much stuff that goes into the operational side, but you could learn all that, you know, like that's all stuff I knew about, but until I owned one, I didn't need to know everything about that, right? But there's so many aspects to it, but really finding the deals, like anything, like, you know, Alex, like, you know, like in single family, if you find a deal, you'll find the money, right? If it's a deal, right?
No
if
doubt.
It's a deal, the money will be there. There's always guys, it doesn't matter, good market, bad market, there's always guys willing to lend on what we do. So if it's truly a deal, you will really find the money. And at the beginning, maybe you have to find, you know, if you can't do a deal on your own, then that's part of what I'm here talking about is, you know, being willing to partner with people in their markets and keep them in these big deals because they don't know how to do them or can't get them financed or they're scared because they don't have the, you know, the background. You know, if they do buy the 100 units, like, what do I do? Right. And so like, how do I rehab 100 units? Like, how do I bring a company in? How do I hire? How do I structure, you know, like how do I pay all that stuff? And so, because we have systems in place already, that's part of what I'm doing these podcasts. Cause yeah, it's cool to talk about a $1 million profit, whatever, which is very rare. Again, I would like to point that out, but, really what I've realized is there's like, I can market on my own for more properties, but you know, I don't need all of every deal, right? So there's guys out there who want to stay in these deals. And if you don't want to stay in the deal, we're happy to pay a wholesale fee to you too. If you have a deal and you know it's a deal and you want a quick wholesale fee and you want out, we're happy to do that too. But if you want to get and stay in a deal, you bring us a deal. We'll talk about structuring it and keeping you in the deal. And so, I mean, we need local operators that can go, that can actually go on site from day to day and check on things with a property manager. And so that's actually become very beneficial. And so it's win-win. So, but that's just it is what I've realized. And when I coached for a national company for a couple of years, residential. But what I realized doing that, it was back in like 2011, is that most people, they had the money, right? Because this coaching program wasn't even cheap. Mm-hmm. But they lacked the
confidence.
Yes. To actually pull the trigger on a deal ever. Right. And so that's why I stopped doing it. The coaching, I actually liked it for the people that it worked for, but the reason I couldn't, like, it was very frustrating for me. They paid all this money, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to be in this program and nothing. They never did. They would call me. They would ask. They would, yep, we're good next week. Oh, no, I didn't because, and they just, they never had the confidence to do it. This is residential. This is the same thing times 10. Everything is bigger, but that's the thing and so are the profits. So that's what drew me to it. And the profits are much bigger too, but there is more risk, but you can structure these things where your risk is very limited.
Okay. Well, because guys, we set up a simple page. Jim isn't selling anything. There's no course or product. He just wants to connect with good, solid people. Where, like he said, he can keep you in the deal. He can pay you a wholesale fee. If you guys head over to flipempire.com/Jim, just a very simple name, phone number, email, that'll automatically get sent to Jim so he can reach out to you. And he's looking for people to partner with, essentially. Last question I have for you, Jim, before we wrap this up. Syndication is, in a nutshell, correct me if I'm wrong, just pooling a bunch of money together to get into these deals. Yep. You decided not to go the syndication route, and there's a lot more, SEC and laws and things like that. I mean, you just got to really be on the up and make sure that you're doing things the right way. You decided to go a different path. Can you just quickly talk about that? Because you piqued my interest when you said that when you get into these deals, you're pretty much getting in with, I think you said, one lender, one down payment, right?
Yeah. Because for me, like, that's just, it's less people to have to talk to make happy to, if these deals go sideways where sometimes they take longer, like that one was 3 months and turned into 24 months, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, there was a great profit in the end of it. But still, if that lender wasn't able to stick around, which they did, but if they weren't able to stick around and make that interest that we paid 10% interest just monthly, they were just making 10%, 10%. They were pretty happy. But if they weren't, we would have to restructure that deal, get a new lender in there. And then would it have been 100%? Probably not. So I would have had to have another person get a down payment. And so where did that start? I'm sorry. I started talking about something else.
We were talking about syndication versus the route that you took.
So, but there's just a lot more people in syndication that you keep happy, right? Like they're, if you have one private lender, there's only one person you have to answer to if the deal goes sideways. And to me, that just, I don't want to talk to 5, 6, 7 people. And also in the syndication stuff, as I was kind of starting to do that, a lot of the people that invest in those, they're investing almost everything they have. Like, if they're putting $100,000, that might be most of what they have liquid.
Yeah, that's tough.
I wasn't cool taking that money. Like, I don't want, like, even if it's a good investment, I'd rather take 500 from one guy who's got 5 million more in the bank, where if he loses that 500, or if the 500 doesn't come back when he thinks, it's not a big deal. Like, he'll get it back in a year and he's not.
It's not going to affect his life.
So for me, it just made more sense. Like, for my peace of mind long-term, for, something that I didn't want to ever have to worry about in the deals, knowing stuff can go sideways and likely will very often, it's just these deals, just this is the way things happen. That's what, keeps them interesting. But I didn't want to have to even have that component for me, just because, I have other businesses, I have other stuff I do. I have kids that I like to hang out with. I don't want to be getting calls from angry people on 10 different deals that I have 5 syndicator. Wasn't for me. One of those things that there's a place for it, absolutely, but just not in my business.
Understood. And it seems like a less complicated, much more simplified way to go about this business. So these people that put up the, 30, 35%, whatever it is, I'm assuming they're getting, like, what percentage of the deal are they getting to put up the money and basically be done with it?
It depends. Yeah, it depends on usually they're getting their equity position for the amount that they put in generally. So we're looking for 30%, and then they'll have a 30% equity position in the deal. We hold 70 on our side.
But understood. We don't have any money in it. Perfect. Who exactly should reach out to us so that, you know, you can be in contact with them? Like, can you kind of just paint a picture of what you're looking for in a partner and what they should be bringing to the table?
Yeah. If somebody wants to stay in the deal, we're just looking for somebody who wants to stay in the deal. They're willing to do some work with it. There's going to be, you know, it's like we need a local partner on the ground to meet either contractors or, you know, like we come on site all the time too, especially during the renovation process. But after that's done, there's a lot less that we have to come on site for. And so just somebody who can go check, you know, once, twice, two to three times a week, do pop-ins, because you're going to be part of this deal too. And so, you know, having that owner operator show up and, you know, care is very important. And so that's what we found, that, you know, having these local operators that are willing to do that, and they want to stay in these deals. So it's good. So you get long-term cash flow from it too. So it doesn't have to be somebody who's experienced. We'll show you everything you need to do. Just bring us a real deal, you know? And so, you can, through the link you have, email me deals. I'll help you evaluate them, right? You know, the they're very easy. They're no different than a single family rental, right? So the evaluation process is the same. It's just bigger numbers.
Yeah. And one thing I want to throw in, and Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but from everything I know about multifamily, guys, don't expect to get your hand on 1, 2, 3 deals, and don't expect those to necessarily be deals. Like from everything I've heard, you have to evaluate a lot of deals to get to that one. Could be 40, 50, 60, sometimes more. Is that right?
100. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And the eval, you'll see, if you send me something, I'll evaluate it in, you know, less than 10 minutes. Because the initial numbers that you give me, you know, what the current rents are, what the potential rents are, current occupancy, taxes, expenses, all that stuff. I mean, it's real simple. We, you know, and I'll look at a market, I'll look at a rental, you know, calculators show like what average rents are in that market. So I'll verify with what they're, you know, that I get, you're telling me the rents are, and, but it takes 10 minutes. It's very quick to evaluate to see if it's a go or no go. Or I could say you're at 2.6, we're at, you know, 1.8, like just, if you can get it for 1.8, give me a call back. But where that's the most we can pay for something like this.
Yeah. Very cool, Jim. Well, hey, brother, I really appreciate the time. If you are interested in partnering with Jim, connecting with him, flipempire.com/Jim, J-I-M. Last question for you before we wrap this bad boy up. Knowing everything you know, I'm guessing you're in your 40s, although it doesn't really matter. I'm guessing you're in 41. Your 40s. 41, young guy. Rewind the clock 20 years. What's the one piece of advice you would share with yourself that you wish you knew back then? Doesn't have to be about business. Could be about anything.
You know, be more, I would think, open-minded. You know, like I've changed a lot, especially since I had kids. I have 8-year-old twins, and just being more laid back and chill, which I didn't used to be. I let things fly off a lot more now. I've having kids really put things in perspective of what's important and what's not. And really focusing on what's important, I think, is what I would tell my 21-year-old self.
I love that.
And don't sweat the small stuff.
Love it. Great advice, words to live by. So Jim, again, appreciate you, brother. I hope several people reach out to you and contact you. And if not, hopefully this has opened your eyes to the world of multifamily investing. Again, don't expect 7-figure deals all the time. You know, those are rare, but they're out there. Obviously,
but they're out there.
They're out there. So appreciate the wisdom, the knowledge, man. Love what you are doing. So thank you so much. Have a great one, guys.
Thanks, Alex.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.